happened before. All right, our next guest joining us now, Paul Dayton. Paul, welcome. How are you?
Doing great, John. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Author of Correcting Our Financial Miseducation and also Socialism, The Gift That Keeps On Taking. You there, Paul? There we go.
I sure am.
I got
you. Yes, I am. I'm just...
No, you're fine. So two books, and I always start off with, okay, why the books? What made you write these in the first place?
Right. So the reason for that is, honestly, I'm a guy. I'm just a regular guy. I worked ordinary jobs, working as like a cook in restaurants and taking other similar jobs. And I was terrible with money at first. Really just, perpetually penniless. And then I was about, 22 years old. I decided to, change my life. I was sick of that. I began seeking answers and doing a lot of research. What I came to find is that a lot of the commonly taught lessons are actually not very good. It's sort of this whole system, the whole template of you go to school, you try to get into a college, you do whatever it takes, you get into that college, and then you the college degree is the great achievement to have, and that's your security ticket. Yeah, right. In life, and then use that to beg somebody for a job. You cling to that one job your whole life. And then basically what you do with your money personally is, most people, the template is your savings are, quote, in your equity in your single family home. And the rest of your money is in your 401k plan that's, locked up behind these bars that you can't touch.
Right.
And a lot of people don't have much cash, much working capital outside of that. And so what happens is, and that's not so bad. Hey, if you got a home and you have some savings and a tax-deferred account, you could do a lot worse. But there are a lot better ways to handle your money that lead to a greater degree of liberty that are achievable much sooner. You can become free much sooner. Myself, by the time I was in my late 20s, I had a net worth of about $50,000, which is not that that's a lot of money, because it absolutely is not, but because I was focusing on building a portfolio of cash flow positive assets, my portfolio has reached a cash flow that was such that I was, working for somebody else was the least important thing I had to do financially, which is something that a lot of people can do. I was mostly in residential real estate. I did a small secondhand store out of one of the vacant units that I had. I tried a couple other things too, relatively low cost entry things. I didn't want to lose my shirt doing anything. And so one lesson is, it's a portfolio cash flow game as opposed to a money pile game. To advance a pile of money. There was a show called Breaking Bad some years ago that was very popular.
Absolutely.
A lot of people know it. And I'll tell you what, if the guy, the main character, the doctor fellow, or the teacher fellow, who becomes the drug
Walter.
Dealer, if he would, Walter
Wise.
White maybe, right?
Yeah.
There you go. The dentist from Seinfeld played the character. But that guy, he did a great job. But if that guy had learned the lesson that if you just plant money trees that he could have provided for his family and his children and his wife and so forth with a much smaller amount of capital, right? If he would have bought them a few corner stores or a gas station or something.
Yeah, really quick, though, Paul, the problem with that, and I tell people this all the time, especially the people that I coach that are in business, the problem with everything you're saying, which, by the way, I agree with you, coach, on what you're talking about. The reality, though, is the system and government especially is against all of that. They don't want you doing that.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. The doing that is like doing it with like both hands tied behind your back.
Right.
And I'm from New York State. I mean, New York State's just about as bad as California. If you wake up in the morning and you have enough money to get out of bed and try to be productive, you must have too much. Mm-hmm. I did almost all this out of Erie County, New York, where the city of Buffalo is.
Okay.
Buffalo is a socialist poverty factory, basically of government. So government in the first place, the city of Buffalo, it happens to be mostly black people, but it doesn't matter who lives there. But that goes into the victim politics industry. So
right.
But there's mostly black people there. The government fails to educate them. The average literacy rate for a black male graduating from the city of Buffalo public schools is third grade.
Wow.
That's according to themselves.
Wow.
That is the Buffalo Board of Education's own report card on themselves. That's what they're telling you. I think one out of five who actually graduate with a diploma, they get basically a fraudulent diploma. How do you get a high school level education certified by a diploma when you can't read the third? Can only read the
can't read the diploma
level.
You just got.
Right, right. And then, so after that, you have what's called paid to fail socialism. When I call my first book Paid to Fail, The Great Failure of Socialism Part 2, which is the Great Society, the War on Poverty, and the ever-expanding welfare state. And so that you have this ever-rising minimum wage in the name of helping the lowest person.
Right.
Well, the minimum wage is a violation of a person's right to contract for the lowest person. And during the first great failure of socialism, known commonly as the New Deal, which I do cover in my first book as well, that during that time, that such a wage makes it illegal for a person to lower their, to undercut their competitor, try to enter the job market. When a pizzeria or a shoe store or something else opens in your neighborhood, notice the first thing they do is everything's on sale.
Mm-hmm.
They undercut prices versus their competitors just to try to get people in the door and give them a try. Later, you can try and raise, well, first of all, 100% of nothing is nothing.
Right.
So to make a sale at any price is better than nothing. And number two, you can always raise your prices later. You know what I mean? Once you get started, once you're established, you get a track record and so forth. When you have a person who, these people that I'm talking about who are not educated in the city of Buffalo, they can't read, they don't have a history of going to class, like the simple things, like be where you're supposed to be on time, be reliable, show up, a lot of these entry-level jobs, you just need to be there. These people don't have any of those things going for them. The only weapon at their disposal in competition for these jobs is to lower their price, which is removed from them, which is abrogated from them by the state when you have these minimum wage laws. So they keep raising the minimum wage above the value, the level of value that such a person possesses when they're trying to enter the job market. And then they also, at the same time, keep paying them more generously not to work. So that, it's like if a person's looking at two jobs, they make $50,000 in salary at job A with no non-monetary compensation. Or if you look at job B, which is $45,000 in salary, but you have full family plan health insurance. Okay, the value of that health insurance is greater than the $5,000 in salary that you're losing. Plus, the health insurance is legally not taxable as income. So you're doing much. It actually, you make more money at job B, even though the salary is $45,000 instead of $50,000.
Uh-huh.
In the same way, when you have these people who are getting these food stamps, who are getting their apartment or housing paid for, or they have to pay very little out of pocket, they're getting unemployment checks on top of that. When you value the value of this, you're looking at about $15,000 a year for that. And they're allowed to make another 5 or 10 on top before they start cutting into what they view as their real job, which is the government, basically handouts from the government, handouts for the healthy.
Right.
And so they're caught in this trap. They're producing poverty. Every time they raise the minimum wage, they're trying to alleviate poverty. Not just the person who just graduated high school today or just turned 18 today who can't read, is that harming, but somebody who did so 10 years ago and hasn't had a legitimate job since then, and of course their turn to the underground economy of prostitution and drug dealing and petty theft and so forth. And so many of these things that are done in the name of helping the smallest person or helping uplift the poor, in fact harm them. And this is something I talk about in my second book. I talk about unshackling the beast and shackling unshackling the populace and shackling the beast. The beast is the government. These are all little shackles. This increase in minimum wage is just clasps around the person's right hand, prevents them from trying to contract and get a job. And then they pay them more handouts, which, by the way, take from people who are trying to be productive, which is what you started out by saying.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want you to do this.
Nope.
They keep taking from you. They keep.
Right.
So they don't make it easy on a person to achieve this state of liberty. I think, obviously, the first solution is get people hip to a lot of these things that we're talking about. And I've heard your show a few times, The Magic of the Internet. You're talking about all the same things. So the first thing you do is you get people hip to it. That way, the politicians will go fetch for what seems popular. And so if we can get it to become popularly demanded, to have the rights and the liberty and the freedom to go do these things, to succeed or to fail, and that's the trick, folks. When you lose once in a while, you have to eat the loss. Because there's a profit and loss system.
Right.
So many people don't ever want to have, you know, they want to sit down at the blackjack table.
They want no losses.
The second they lose a hand. Right. And so in real life, to eat a loss once in a while is part of you gain more over the course of the long haul.
Very true. Very true. Paul, what's the best way folks can find you, sir?
My website is called pauldayton.us, Dayton like Ohio, D-A-Y-T-O-N, pauldayton.us.
Okay, so third book on the way, or are you done with the two?
Oh, no, I'll definitely bring out a third book recently. I just finished the second book about a month ago, so
okay.
It's just fresh, brand new. It's a coffee table book without any pictures is what I call it. It's about 500 pages. It's pretty big. in terms of, you know, I don't want to have small print. I want to make it available for everybody. And socialism, I guess, keeps on taking. What I try to do is there's three main fallacies. One is the fallacy of the lamp. So people beg for all these shackles in the name of their own upliftment, which, in fact, harnesses them from being able to start their own business, harnesses them from being able to have more medical treatment to choose from, and so forth. So the fallacy of the lamp is, you know, government comes along, or politicians come along, and they say, concentrate the power into the hands of the few by decree in the name of liberating the masses. Give us the choice to say how much you can pay for things. Give us the choice to say how much you can have for, in terms of health care and food and so forth. And so they think they're going to rub the lamp. Each individual person, voter, thinks, oh, well, it'll grant my wishes. Mm-hmm. I want this, I want that. When in fact, when 7 billion people all rub the lamp 7 billion times and make 7 billion different wishes, they're all going to conflict. The only persons whose wishes get granted are the people who hold power, the politicians, when you do such a system.
That's right.
Number two, what I said before, the shackling of the beast, the unshackling of the citizenry. If you imagine King Kong, this giant gorilla, he's got all four of his limbs chained to some wall someplace, right? You undo one of the limbs, and at Niagara Falls, the waterfall where I'm from in Buffalo, they had this bicycle you can sit on it, pedal it, and it shows you how many kilowatt hours you just made, and it goes into the power thing. So this one, the beast, King Kong, with one arm free, goes on there and does 100,000 man-hours worth of electricity in an hour, right? We see emergency situations happen, war times, things like that. In a short burst, it happens, people say, wow, imagine if we undid another one of its arms, or all four of its arms. But what happens is, when you unshackle it enough, three of them are free, it rips the fourth arm from the wall, and now the roles of master and servant are inverted.
Yep.
The beast no longer does what you say. The beast is in charge now. And let's do a few examples of that. I do France in the late 18th century, which, how anybody can utilize the French Revolution as an instance in which the lowest people were uplifted is mind-boggling. There is no greater example of tyranny in a decade of perpetual tyranny, slaughter of the lowest people, destruction of the money. I mean, so I lay that out. Of course, in Germany during the 30s and 40s, we see another example of that. China, again, in mid-century, in the 20th century. So shackle the beast, unshackle the citizenry, give people the freedom to choose. These are a couple of the themes that we display throughout 4,000 years of recorded human history, 4,000 years.
Nice. Good job. Paul, I appreciate you joining us. Paul Dayton, it's pauldayton.us is the website. Paul, I appreciate you very much. Keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you, sir. You as well.
You're very welcome. Have a great evening, Paul. We'll take a quick break. Golden Eagle Financial is next. Al Smith, much like we were talking.